Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Have you seen the show Untold Stories of the ER on TLC? Anyone ever seen that show? So it's been on TLC for about a decade, and it's true stories from actual ERs. In the episodes, the ER doctors actually play themselves, and sometimes the people who came into the ER play themselves. So what are these untold stories? Well, there was a person who got stuck in a toilet. In another episode, there was a drunk stripper who came in with a stiletto stuck in her face, unable to get it out. There was the man who impaled himself in the groin on a shovel. We're talking the best and brightest. There was the dude who crashed his car into a cow and came into the hospital covered in manure. There was the dude who thought he was constipated. Turns out he wasn't constipated. That's not why nothing was coming out. There's another show called Sex Sent Me to the ER. I'll tell you how I first heard these shows. I watched some reality TV. I'd never heard of either of these shows. But we have received a bunch of calls over the last 5 years from people who are interested in making a TV show about our church. Now, we have had someone who made like a 6-episode video small group Bible study curriculum about our church, which is being shown on a Christian cable network. But I'm talking about like actual calls from like real TV producers, real networks asking, could we make a show about your church? And we said no like 6 or 7 times, everyone who asked us, and mostly because we weren't sure if we could trust the production company we'd be working with. But then we thought, well, if we could use our own production company, maybe. So in the last few months, we had a few meetings out in Hollywood, and one of them was with the company that makes Untold Stories of the ER, and Sex Sent Me to the ER, and a bunch of other shows that are on TV. And so we were sitting in their conference room, and they were very, very excited about making our church, a TV show about our church. We said no to them too. We keep saying no to everybody. But they were very excited, and they're like, Vince, we really want to do this with you. And so I said to them, and there was posters all around this conference room of all the shows that they make, including those two shows. And so I said that at one point, I said, listen, if we're going to do this with you, my one demand is that I have to star in an episode of Sex Sent Me to the ER. And so they all started laughing. And then I said, I can take care of the sex part, but how do I do it in a way that sends me to the ER? I probably shouldn't have told you that, huh? You're like, our pastor. Today, we are starting this brand new series called You Say Church, I Say. And we're going to take 3 weeks to think about, like, what should come to mind, if you were to play like a word association game, what should come to mind when you hear the word church? Now, there are a lot of people in our society who would say words like judgmental, hypocritical, political, boring, but are they right? Is that what the church is supposed to be? How are we to understand the church? And this should really matter to us. You might be thinking, I don't know if this series means a lot to me. It really should. It may be that you feel very far from the church. Maybe this is one of your first times at Verve. Maybe it's the first time you've been at church in your life or in a very long time, but you're here today for a reason, right? Maybe you're wondering, like, what exactly is the church? What did God have in mind? And is that something I need in my life? Others of us, we've been coming to church for a bit or maybe for a long time, and so you are a part of a church and you represent a church. What does that mean? What does it mean for you to be a part of a church and to represent a church, and how does that change your life? And so we're going to spend just 3 weeks thinking about this. And as people who are a part of a church or checking out Verve, I think this is really important. And it's especially important, I think, right now. Because in 2 weeks, like 2 weeks from today, we are going to be adding a service. Like next week is the last time we're going to have two services on Sunday at 10 and 11:30. In 2 weeks, we're going to have three services, 9, 10:30, and 12. And so we're adding this service so that more people who are not a part of Verve can have the opportunity to come. And so that more people who are a part of Verve can have the opportunity to serve. But why? Like why? Why is what we do here so important that we need to sacrifice our time and our money and our energy and even say, man, let's sacrifice more of it? Well, to understand that, we need to understand what the church is. And today, I want to show you that when you think of church, one of the things you should think of is a hospital. The church is a hospital for hurting people, a place where they can find hope. The church is like an emergency room for sinners where they can find God's transforming love. Did you know that the word hospital originally comes from the word hospitality? And the word hospitality, like when we read it in the Bible where God commands Christians to practice hospitality, it comes from originally the word phlozenos, which means loving strangers. That's what the word hospitality means. It means to love strangers. And the idea is that if you know a person, of course you're going to love them. But God calls Christians to a higher standard. He calls us to love strangers, to love people who really there's no reason for us to love. So in the early days of Christianity, the early Christians took this very seriously. Like just after Christianity started, there were these massive plagues that overtook cities. People who didn't contract the deadly disease fled the cities in hope of saving their own lives, and they would leave their friends, their family, their neighbors to fend for themselves and very likely die. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people in cities would die, and everyone fled the cities except the Christians. This is not in the Bible. This is history. History tells us that the Christians stayed, and they tried to care for and nurse the sick back to health, their family, their friends, strangers, people they didn't know, their neighbors. And what happened was more and more people, because of experiencing the compassion of Jesus' followers, started to believe in Jesus themselves. In fact, it was during those plagues that Christianity grew at the highest rate in the history of Christianity. Which is kind of crazy when you consider the fact that most people were dying. That's the church. The church loves strangers. The church loves people that really there's no reason to love. The church offers healing and it helps lead people to wholeness. The church it lives out Jesus' compassion in a way that other people are drawn to Jesus. The church is a hospital. And the reason the church is that way is because the church got that from Jesus. You look at Jesus' life, he loved people who really there was no reason to love, and he would offer healing, he would lead people to wholeness, and people were drawn to him because of his compassion. I want to show you a story this morning. If you have a Bible, open to Luke chapter 17. If you don't have a Bible, it's okay. We put all the verses on the screen. You can just read them up there in a second. And if you don't own a Bible, we give them out for free at the Velcro Bar. We give out tons of Bibles. We love to do that. So if you need a Bible to bring home with you, just grab a Bible today. So we're going to read Luke chapter 17, starting in verse 11, and then we'll walk through it. So if there's stuff you're like, why is that? Well, I'll help you understand. So starting in verse 11, Luke chapter 17, it says, now on his is Jesus. Now on Jesus' way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, Jesus, Master, have pity on us. When he saw them, he said, go show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and thanked him. And he was a Samaritan. Jesus asked, were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God except this foreigner? Then he said to him, rise and go. Your faith has made you well. So there are some things going on in this story that maybe requires a little bit of background to fully understand. So I'm going to tell you the story again. I'll just kind of fill in the blanks for you. So Jesus is walking to the city of Jerusalem with his 12 disciples. And we saw that the Bible makes this point that he's walking on the boundary line between Galilee and Samaria. Galilee is where the Jewish people lived. Samaria was where the Samaritans lived. And personally, as I picture this, I kind of picture Jesus like walking like right along the boundary line, kind of like this. And I think that he was doing it on purpose. See, as much racial hatred as you can imagine existed between these two groups of people, the Jewish people and the Samaritan people, their feelings towards each other might be compared today to, I don't know, the hatred between like the Bloods and the Crips, or between Yankees fans and Red Sox fans, or between Donald Trump and poor people. I don't know. So here's the deal. Jewish people were taught that they were not to intermarry with people of other faiths and other races, but that's exactly what the Samaritans were. They were the descendants of forbidden racial mixed marriages. And so, growing up, every Jewish child had this ingrained in them. Like if they were walking with mom or dad and saw a Samaritan person, their mom or dad would pull them aside and say to them, do you see that? That's not a person. That's a dog. They don't matter. You are God's child. You are God's person. They are not God's child. They are not. They are evil. You don't play with them. You don't talk to them. You don't eat with them. Don't even look at them. They're evil. They are dogs. That's how bad it was. You were taught that growing up. And Jesus was Jewish, but he was not your typical Jewish person of that day. In fact, it seems, and we see this a lot in the Bible, that he really enjoyed challenging the kind of fixed ideas of the Jewish people. He liked to make them think, and he loved to break their rules. And that's why I think that he was walking kind of like this on the line, because you're not allowed to go in Samaria if you're a Jewish person. And so I kind of picture him walking and doing one of these, going kind of like, and then looking at them and kind of smiling and just keeping walking on the border. And we see other times where he actually goes into Samaria, which was like crazy and forbidden. In a Jewish person's mind, being a Samaritan was about as low as you could go. Maybe the only thing that was worse was being a leper, having the disease of leprosy. A leper was like the worst social outcast that you could imagine. Let me kind of describe the way leprosy was understood back in the first century. So the most common type of leprosy began as a feeling of lethargy and pain in your joints. That was kind of the first sign that you were getting leprosy. And soon what would happen is you'd get discolored patches and nodules on your face, and eventually the victim's face would be unrecognizable. It wasn't the person you used to know. And then the sores on your body would start to ulcerate, and the stench of this person was unbearable. Pretty soon the vocal cords would start to ulcerate, and it would leave the person's voice hoarse and raspy. But the greatest physical damage from leprosy came because leprosy leaves a person without the ability to feel. And so, like, you can't feel pain if you have leprosy. Lepers, you probably know, like, will lose, like, fingers and toes. And people used to think that, like, they just fell off. You know, if you were a leper, like, parts of your body would just fall off and stuff. But that's not what it actually happens. So, for instance, some researchers stayed up at night and they watched lepers sleep. And what they found is that rats would come and chew away at their fingers or their toes, and the leper would sleep right through it because they can't feel pain. And so eventually they have no finger, and everyone would think, oh, their finger fell off, but that's not what happened. Back in Jesus' time, the first sign of leprosy was a death sentence. In fact, listen to what the law said. It said, the person who has the leprous disease shall wear torn clothes and let the hair of his head be disheveled. And he shall cover his upper lip and cry out, unclean, unclean. He shall remain unclean as long as he has the disease. He is unclean. He shall live alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. And so the law made it quite clear, like, don't touch a leper. Don't go near a leper. But the rabbis, the religious teachers of Jesus' time, they took it much further. They said that if a person with leprosy came into a house, that house was defiled and had to be destroyed. They said that if you saw a leper on the street, it was completely permissible to pelt that person with stones or eggs. And they said that to touch a leper was to become defiled yourself. And so, and you can just imagine living the life of a leper. You know, the thought when it hits you, I'm never going to be touched again. Right? Never to feel the hug of your child or the hand of a friend grasping yours, the embrace of your spouse, your father's arm draped over your shoulder. Here's the thing, leprosy was not just a physical disease, it carried a moral stigma as well. When a person thought they might have contracted leprosy, the deal was that you had to go to the priest. And the priest back then would also serve kind of like the local doctor. And the priest would examine the person, and if he thought that this person had leprosy, he would say one word. And that one word would banish that person from the community forever. The one word was unclean or dirty. If he said unclean or if he said dirty, you had to leave the city, leave town, and the best you could hope for is that maybe instead of living off by yourself for the rest of your life, you might find a colony of other lepers and live with them. Back then, kids were taught that if you ever saw a leper, like in the distance, or someone you thought might be a leper, someone with a bandage on them, that you were to start screaming, dirty, dirty, or unclean. Little children playing on the streets would see a man walking down the road with a bandage, and they would all start screaming, dirty, dirty. And then anyone else who heard would start joining in unison in a way of trying to protect the community. They would all yell, dirty, dirty, until finally this leper would go off into the distance and leave them alone. Can you imagine living that kind of life? Can you imagine being the dirty person? Well, this one particular day, Jesus is walking to Jerusalem along the boundary line between Samaria and Galilee, and suddenly in front of him, at a distance, there's these 10 men, and they're all lepers. And I'm sure that Jesus' 12 disciples, his kind of ministry apprentices, they had been taught what everyone else had as they grew up, that when you see a leper, you yell out, dirty. But I bet Jesus had taught them, hey, we don't do that. Like, that's what they do. We don't do that. But still, when they saw these lepers, I'm sure they couldn't help. They were like, dirty! And Jesus kind of gave them a look, and they're like, right? Now, it turns out this wasn't the first time they had ever seen lepers. There was another time where this guy approached Jesus, a leper, and everyone started freaking out, unclean, dirty. And to their shock, to their, like, utter amazement, Jesus walked up to the leper and touched him. No one had ever seen anyone touch a leper. And everyone must have been thinking, like, does Jesus not know? How could he not know? And everyone assumed that, of course, this leper is going to infect Jesus with his leprosy. But he didn't. Instead, somehow, it was like Jesus infected the leper with his love, and it healed him. The leprosy was gone. Well, this time, the lepers didn't come that close. They knew better. And so they've been looking for Jesus. Finally, they find him. They've been looking because they heard Jesus can actually make lepers clean. And when they saw him, because they knew not to get too close, they kind of stayed at a distance, maybe up on a hill a little bit. And they're calling out to him, "Jesus, Master, please feel sorry for us. Have pity on us. Save us." And Jesus calls out to them, "Go to the priest, you're clean," which was weird, like really weird, because they looked at each other, they looked at their own arms and their own legs, and they were not clean. He just said, "We're clean, you're clean," but they're like, "No, we're not clean. We're as leprous as ever. We're as dirty as ever. We're as gross as ever." And you can probably, you know, guess that they probably mumbled to each other, "Is he blowing us off? Like, what is he doing? Why does he say we're clean? We're not clean." And so they probably just stood there for a while. And I imagine maybe Jesus said again, "I said, go to the priest. You're clean." They're not clean. And they stood there for a while, I'm guessing. And maybe one of them finally said, "You know what? This is stupid. I mean, what else are we going to do? Let's just go to the priest." He said, "It doesn't make it. We're not clean, but let's go to the priest." And I don't know how it happened, but they start walking towards the priest. And as they start walking to the priest, it's like with each step, it's like the tiniest little sore on one of their fingers cleared up. And they kept walking, and this arm that hadn't felt any sensation for who knows how long, it started to tingle. Almost like when your arm falls asleep and you start to feel it again. They're like, "I feel something." And each step they take, they're becoming clean. And the Bible said, as they went, they were cleansed. It just happened as they made this journey. The closer they got to the priest, the closer to wholeness they were. And you can imagine, I'm guessing that after a few steps, they start realizing, "Wait, this is working." They probably started jogging, right? And they're like, "Look," and then they're probably all 10 of them just full out sprinting to the priest, because every step they become more and more clean. And so finally they get to the priest, and the priest examines them, and he looks at the first and he's like, "You're clean. You're clean. It's one by one. You're clean. You're clean. Clean. You're clean. You're clean." Until finally he gets to the 10th, and to him he says, "You're clean, but you're still a dog." Because the 10th, it says, was a Samaritan. A Samaritan who had gone to see the Jewish priest. Now, the other 9, who were apparently all Jews, did what I think probably most of us would have done. When they realized they're clean, they ran to their families. Right? They're like, "I get to go to my family for the first time." And so they run to their families. But the one, the 10th, the Samaritan, man, he took off in a sprint, and he ran, and he found like the boundary line between Samaria and Galilee, and he just starts running the boundary line like it was train tracks, until finally he catches up to Jesus and his 12 disciples, and he calls out, "Jesus!" And the 13 of them turn around, and here's the Samaritan, and he runs up, and he falls at, and he grabs onto Jesus' feet. Probably the first time he had touched anyone in who knows how long. And he's like, "Jesus, thank you. Thank you." And Jesus kind of helps him up to his feet, and he says, I could have sworn there were 10 of you. "Hey, Peter, weren't there 10? Did you count 10? Peter's like, "Yeah, I counted 10. There were 10, Jesus." And he's like, "Look at this. Only one of them came back to thank me, and it's the foreigner." And I'm guessing he gave a little look to the 12, and then he says to the Samaritan, he says, "Huh, I thought you were supposed to be a dog. You are no dog. How could a dog have it in his heart to thank me? Look at me, you are no dog. And your faith has made you well. Go home and go in peace." Now, can I kind of parallel that story to our lives? My guess is that a lot of us, at some point in our lives, have realized that we're dirty. It's not the same as leprosy, but it's not altogether different. You know, there are some similarities. We realize that we're dirty. Now, some of our dirtiness comes, I think, just because we were born into it. And there's some of our dirtiness is a result of things that people have done to us, bad things people have done to us. And a lot of our dirtiness, honestly, is just because of the bad choices that we've made along the way. We have become dirty, and there are some things that we need to go through if we're going to be made clean, if we're going to be made whole. And the first thing is that we need to realize that we are dirty, that we have a problem, that we need help. The issue is a lot of people just cannot admit that. They just can't see their dirtiness, right? In fact, my guess is that there probably are some people in this room right now who, if we're all just being super honest, would be like, Vince, I'm pretty sure you're talking to the person next to me because I'm not dirty. It's got to be these other people. They look a little dirty, but I'm not dirty. So some people just cannot own their condition. We call it denial, right? You know, I think maybe the only antidote to denial is pain. There's a famous author, C.S. Lewis, and he once said, pain insists upon being attended to. It's like you can just go on with your problems and your issues and your dirtiness until finally they cause enough disruption in your life. They cause enough broken relationships, enough dysfunction happens that you're in pain and you're like, okay, I have to admit I'm dirty. And at that point, we're inspired to look for help. And hopefully we look to Jesus because he is the one who can help us. People today don't often realize that. That's why we need to let them know. The lepers in this story, they realized that. It was like, he is the one person who can make us clean. If you realize that, if you start to think, maybe God's what I need, maybe I need to figure out this Jesus thing, man, you have put yourself in an incredibly good position. Because there is a promise that God makes to you in the Bible. What we're going to put on the screen, Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 13. God says, you will seek me and you will find me. When you seek me with all your heart, I will be found by you. It's a guarantee. God says, if you honestly and wholeheartedly look for me, you are going to find me. And listen, if you look for Jesus, you're going to see him. And when you see him, that's your chance, kind of like the lepers, to cry out for help. It's almost like we're those lepers. We're up on the hill. We catch sight of Jesus. Maybe for some of us, he's still far off in the distance. It's like, I don't even know if I completely understand him or I completely get this, but he's close enough that I can just yell, help. Like, would you have pity on me and some of the broken things I have in my life? And if you call that out to Jesus, his response will be, go to the priest. You're clean. You're clean. See, when we in faith call out to Jesus and ask him to bring healing to our lives, he does. He does. He says, you were dirty, but you're now clean. And whoo, that's an awesome thing. Right? I mean, for a lot of us, maybe all of us, that's what we've been hoping for. That's what we've been longing for. It is an awesome thing, but it's not the end. It's not the end. It's a new beginning. Like those lepers. Like in that moment, Jesus says, you are now clean, but they weren't yet whole. Right? They were clean, but they weren't yet whole. And maybe some of us, maybe we've been made clean by Jesus because we called out to him, but the truth is we have not yet been made whole. But because wholeness, that's a journey. Like that's a journey, kind of like those lepers where with each step in that journey, they're becoming more and more whole. We need to go on this journey, and as we go on that journey, usually gradually, we're healed. We're healed. And I'll tell you this, we need help in that journey to wholeness. Like, we live in, like, the most, like, independent, self-made country, like, probably in the world. But man, we can't do this alone. We need help because it's an amazing journey. Like you're moving towards wholeness and you're clean and you're healing. But it's not always easy, right? We all have things from our past that keep wanting to pull us back. I'm assuming you do, right? And then even when you're moving forward, like, just new things kind of appear in your life that trip us up. It's like, I was doing good. Now look at this new boss. Look at this new situation. Look at this new temptation. Things trip us up. It's an amazing journey, but it's not an easy one. And so what we need is, we need a spiritual hospital. And that's what the church is. You say church, I say hospital. That's what Verve is. We are a hospital for people who are wanting to call out to Jesus. Maybe don't even know how, but they want to call out to Jesus. We're a hospital for people who realize that they're dirty and they want to be clean. For people who are broken and they want to take the journey towards wholeness. Did you notice in the story, I find this fascinating, that Jesus didn't care. He didn't care how they got leprosy. He didn't say, now, tell me about this. Was this your fault? Like, what did you do that? He didn't care which one was a Samaritan or that the guy was a Samaritan. His only concern was, did they want healing? Right? There's people who do and there's people who don't. If you want healing, and they did, he provided it. It's like an actual hospital, right? You show up at the emergency room of the hospital, they're not asking how you got hurt, right? In the hospital, they don't say, hey, listen, if this was something stupid you did, we're not going to help you, right? Like, you got to tell us, like, was this something stupid? And this junk stripper with a stiletto in her face is like, no, it wasn't. It's an honest mistake. Stiletto in the face. Right? The hospital's job isn't to judge, right? So it's not to judge what's happened. They just heal what's happened. And that's the church. Right? The way God intended, the way God designed it, we don't judge who you are or what you've done. Our job is not to judge what's happened. It's to heal what's happened. That's the church. The only question the church asks is, do you want healing? There's some people who don't, but if you do, that's why we exist. If you do, if you're kind of at the top of the hill and you're looking for help, then we can help you to call out to Jesus. Because what we've discovered is Jesus is the one who makes people clean. And if you call out to him, then you start moving forward this journey towards wholeness. And God would say in the Bible, he says it all over the Bible, that you can't do that alone. That journey is not something you do in isolation. You need help. I need help. You need to be a part of a church. You know, where you have people who care about you and who are caring for you. One of the places that happens at Verve is in microgroups. Microgroups are 3 to 6 people who meet once a week, and they just share life together, love each other, encourage each other, support each other, pray for each other. I wanted you to hear the story of a person who has really experienced kind of the hospital nature of the church, who has had a group of people who cared for her and cared about her when she needed it. And so here is Lauren's story.
Hi, my name is Lauren, and I want to tell you how the church has been a hospital for me. I came to Verve about 4.5 years ago, and I had no idea what I was looking for, but I knew that one of the things I really wanted from a church was a group of people who would support me along my journey. I had no idea what a microgroup was. I had no idea what they did, but I decided to go for it, and I'm really glad that I did. I got connected with a group of 4 amazing ladies, and I'm not even sure that 4 years later I could explain in a video how they have changed my life. But I know, looking back, that God put them there and he was really creating a support system for me. God knew what I didn't, and that was that the next 3 years of my life were going to be really, really tough. In that time, I went through a major medical episode. My dad was tragically killed, and my husband one day asked me for a divorce. during those really major events, I found myself in probably the darkest place I've ever been in. Without my microgroup, I'm not sure that I even make it through that. I remember the night that my dad died. After talking with my family, the next group of people I contracted were my group of microgroup girls. And they just surrounded me with love. They were there for me with food, meals, let me borrow cars, just everything that I needed to get through that really difficult time. I remember one night shortly after my divorce, I was sitting on my living room floor, probably in the worst place I've ever been, just completely broken and broken down. And I got a text from one of my microgroup girls who said, "How are you doing?" And I said, "Not okay." And a half an hour later, she's at my doorstep with a bag full of French fries and hamburgers and two different kinds of shakes and sundaes. And she just said, "I wasn't sure what you needed." And she just was there for me. And that's really what my microgroup has been for me, just people who are there consistently, unconditionally to provide that love and support. And that's how the church has been a hospital for me.
Man, I don't know about you, I need that. I've needed that in my life, and I'm guessing you need that as well. And this journey towards wholeness is something we do together, and we need that. And as we begin to experience healing, kind of like the 10th leper in that story, you thank God for it, right? Our wholeness should lead us to worship. Like that's the natural result of becoming whole, is you worship God, and that brings glory to God, which is the ultimate goal of life. And listen, worshiping God, it does include singing songs to Him on a Sunday morning. The Bible says it does include giving money back to Him, but it also means becoming a doctor in His spiritual hospital. See, normally, if you get sick and you have to go to the hospital, once you get better, you leave the hospital, right? But the way it works with God, the way it works with the church is you come because you're sick and need healing, and then you stay because others are sick and need healing. You read the Bible and you will very quickly realize it's not the pastors of the church who are like the doctors in the spiritual hospital, it's everyone. It's everyone. Everyone who has called out to Jesus and started to experience some healing become doctors who help other people call out to Jesus and start to experience some healing. So I wonder, where are you at today? Where are you at? Maybe you're realizing that you need to call out to Jesus. We'd love to help with that. Or maybe you have, and you've been coming here, but you've never really gotten connected. You don't have those kind of people in your life. If you went through something horrible, you wouldn't know who to call. You wouldn't have people texting you, and you need to get connected here so that you have people helping you on your journey towards wholeness. Or maybe you've been on that journey, and you're starting to experience some healing, and you need to start thinking a lot more about how you can help others to call out to Jesus and experience that healing. I don't know where you're at, but let's pray and ask God to show us that and to move us forward in this journey. God, thanks so much for your love for us, that you are hospitable to us. You love us even when we're at our worst, even when love is the last thing we deserve from you. You have this unconditional love and acceptance. God, would you help us to live in that same kind of way? You know, we are the church. The church isn't a building. It's not a corporation. It's people. We are the church. And as a church, as a people, we are supposed to be a hospital. We practice hospitality. We love strangers. We love people who maybe there's no discernible reason for us to love them, but we love them because we have been called to that by you. And we help people to call out to Jesus, and we walk with people in their journey towards healing and wholeness. God, would you help us to see where we're at in that journey? Maybe there's somebody in this room who's like, I need to call out to Jesus today. Maybe some people who are like, I've called out to Jesus, but I have not gotten connected here. I don't have people to walk with me in my journey. Maybe some of us are enjoying the journey towards wholeness, but we're realizing right now, I'm not really helping other people with that. And that's the calling. We are the church, and we are a hospital. We pray all these things In Jesus' name, amen.